Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for hitting play on a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science. Although he works like does internet shit for the big wigs in the travel and finance industries. We don't care about that right now. We need his political science knowledge is what we're working with. This is Plastic Cup Politics. At Plastic Cup Pod is the best way to interact with the show. Subscribe, however you're listening. Hit the subscribe button. That'll be rad. This is an Arizona-based drinking, kind of, and politics podcast based right out of here in Arizona. Drinking because I'm not drinking right now, but we will jump right into this because, hey, we've been talking. This is going to be a quick hitter. It is June 8th, and Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how you doing? I don't know if much has changed in the past 4 days, but how is it and what are you having?
I'm still working on that bottle of Laphroaig.
Thank you God, because if you polish that thing off in 4 days, I'd be like, yeesh.
Yeah, well, you know, there have been more exciting weeks in my life where I have managed to polish a full bottle of scotch, but, and in my youth, there were nights where I polished a whole bottle of scotch, but not anymore. That just doesn't seem fun anyway, especially when you're drinking expensive scotch, when it's like, you know, fucking Dewar's or whatever. Yeah, knocked the whole bottle out, but this, it just doesn't seem pleasant at all. And I'm doing well. I'm happy to be back for a quick hitter tonight.
Yeah, I guess we could start off by talking about how on Saturday, you and I and your lovely wife all went down to the protests in Phoenix. Very peaceful protests. Did some kneeling, did some chanting. I was rocking the Daniel Shaver sign. Your lovely little wife was rocking the John Lokes sign. And it was kind of, I was talking to another acquaintance of mine who's one of the All Lives Matter folks who I definitely have issue with. It's like, everything doesn't need to be done with a shotgun, you know, like. You can narrow your focus just a little bit. And you know what? It was a Black Lives Matter protest. And both Jen and I, we were both wearing we were both carrying signs looking for justice in white men that were shot. And nobody stopped us and said, oh, no, you can't be here because those people that were victims of police violence, they were white. So you can't be at our protest because this is for Black lives only. You dumb shits. So
yeah,
anyway,
the All Lives Matter crowd kind of stuns me in part because there are some of them that genuinely believe it. Right. For most of them, it's a cynical ploy and they know it. Right. Because they know that it's a false equivalence. Right. Yes, it is. It is in sort of absolutist terms true. All lives matter, especially
100%
here in the United States, where the Constitution guarantees the value of those lives. Right. But the reason it's a false equivalence is because they're not all lives are under threat, not in the same way, right? So if we were to go with like a pyramid, a pyramid of pain, right, which is a concept that you find a lot in like economics. So I'm not just making that up. It's not from WWE or anything like that. And so the idea is, right, you have sort of a mounting level of threat under which a certain group of people exist on a daily basis. And down at the bottom, you have the mass of Americans who live their days and nights under almost no threat at all, right? And the vast majority of those are white. So the next level up, right, would be the sort of the general mass of poor people, which would include a significant number of white people, like Daniel Shaver, who was murdered by an officer of the Mesa Police Department whose name I can't remember, or I would absolutely fucking call him out right now. A piece of shit who actually went out and got "you're fucked" etched on the receiver cover of his AR-15, right? And that he was almost punished more for that than he was for having shot an unarmed man who was begging for his life.
Five times.
Because it's against Mesa PD's rules to etch something like that on your weapon. The fact that a rule like that need be created is astonishing in and of itself. And then the other gentleman that Jen was protesting on behalf, actually two two men, well, a man and a boy, right? So John Loxus was a white man who was murdered by a Scottsdale police officer who shot him in the head with an AR-15 while he was holding his nine-month-old grandson and nothing else, no weapons. His nine-month-old grandson, by the way, is a black man, or someday will be, and hopefully John's death and the outrage around it can help contribute to making the world a safer place for his grandson, Neo. Whew, have you choked up there for a sec.
But yeah, a poor person.
Yeah, so both of them fit into that category of poor people, right? And then you go next up, and that's, and I hate to make sort of invidious, well, I don't know if invidious is the right word, but it almost sounds divisive to say, right, next up, is Hispanic people, right, who aren't quite under the same threat as black people. But in general, it's true. Or at least there seems to be a significant amount of evidence to indicate that it's true, that even more so than Hispanic people and even more so than just poor Hispanic people, black people in general are under a greater threat. And in part, you can see that, right, by the fact that amongst black people, your socioeconomic status makes very little difference. O.J. Simpson, to the contrary, right? His wealth and fame did manage to get him off for having murdered two people. But in general, you know, you could be a Harvard professor, you could be a United States senator, you could be an incredibly wealthy individual in one of the wealthy suburbs of Atlanta, right? You could be all of those. Sort of, you could occupy all of those rather prestigious roles in American society, but if your skin is black and you encounter the police, you are under threat. And we have clear evidence of it, right? We don't need to speculate. We have statistical evidence, and then we also have anecdotes, which we're all privy to, right? We've all been here for them. The whole beer hall or the beer summit at the White House. After Professor Gates was abused by a white police officer, Professor Gates being a black professor at, I think it was Harvard, which is where the example brought the example to mind. So, you know, across the board, socioeconomically, black people seem to be under greater threat than any other population in the United States. Now, under the Trump administration, that dynamic has started to shift a little bit because of the anti-immigrant rhetoric, right?
Right.
And the shit that's been going on down at the border. But for more or less the past 400 years, it has been the case that the group of Americans that are under the greatest threat from the institutions built by white Americans are black Americans. So while it's true that all of the lives in that pyramid of pain, they all matter. Not all of the lives in that pyramid of pain are under the same constant threat from the government institutions that are supposed to serve and protect them. And so it is a false equivalence, and it's a really, like, base and ugly one. You know, it's the kind of shit that you hear from people who are just really too stupid to know better or too racist to admit that black people are under threat from cops.
I'm going to just leave that one there and say that I had a good time at the protest. And at the end of the last show, I said that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have a good time. I needed my battery recharged. Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, towards the end was starting to get pretty salty. But
let me be clear. I was salty about a specific group of people, right? Phoenix PD was fucking awesome. They stayed well back from the protests. They made sure just to control traffic a couple blocks away so it didn't incite conflict with the protesters. Which has been the problem in a lot of these events that have devolved into violence. Very often it has been that moment of confrontation with peaceful protesters when the PD, either because they get attacked by bottles and rocks from angry young people who just have way too much energy, or very often, and we have, again, videographic evidence of this happening, the police themselves get all hyped up and attack first. Either way, Phoenix PD did the right thing. They stayed back. They let the protesters march through their entire route. They let them hold their little rally, by the way, it was thousands of people, on the steps of the city hall. And when it was done, they drove around with a little ATV, and this was a little post-apocalyptic and weird, with a loudspeaker on top of it, broadcasting a recording about the president, or not the president, the governor's, let's hope he never becomes president, the governor's curfew. And that, you know, anyone who defied the curfew was subject to arrest, blah, blah, blah. So the crowd began to break up. Everybody went home. The whole thing was peaceful. I didn't see a single conflict except at the very end when there was an older black man who obviously came from a very different era of protest and civil rights who got very angry about something that one of the Black Lives Matters organizers had said. And there was a very heated discussion amongst them. But even that heated discussion never once felt threatening the entire time. Right. And then as we're leaving, and I noticed these guys on the way in as well, but as we're leaving, it was impossible to miss. The federal law enforcement officers, specifically U.S. Marshals, were the only people at that rally, or the only law enforcement officers at that rally, who refused to show their faces. They were running around in fucking balaclavas like they were DEA agents about to raid the house of a particularly vengeful drug lord. Right. So, oh, God, we can't let these people see our faces as we enforce the fucking law. Right. And they had like several ranks of Phoenix PD standing in front of them to protect them from the vicious crowds of peaceful protesters. They were up on top of one of the city parking garages, flying a fucking drone around for no apparent reason, because the drone couldn't go higher than the surrounding buildings. So all they were taking pictures of was an empty intersection as we walked through it. Because this was afterwards when everyone was going home. We were walking back to our car. There was no one around and hadn't been for hours at that intersection. So what it was, they were supposedly, and there was another guy up there with a giant set of binoculars. Again, his view of everything that happened was blocked by three or four gigantic skyscrapers. So what the fuck were the binoculars for? What was he looking at?
He was checking the serial number on the drone.
Yeah. So as we're walking out, I mentioned that the U.S. Marshals were the only ones who wouldn't show their faces, right? Even most of the protesters at some point or another had to pull their masks down because it was hot out there. Wasn't exactly comfortable the whole time, although I kept mine up, Mark kept his up, Jen kept hers up. So, you know, and most of the people there, by the way, were wearing masks and doing their best to...
Almost everybody. I mean, yeah. When I say the majority, I mean in the 90s.
But they were wearing just the medical coverings, right? There were some people who had bandanas and shit around their faces that would have hidden a little bit more. But that's not what I'm talking about with these U.S. Marshal dicks. They were wearing actual fucking ski masks, the kind they wear when they go on raids so that bad guys don't know who they are. They weren't facing off against bad guys. They were facing off against the U.S. citizens who they are sworn to serve and protect. The fuck did they need the masks for? What was the drone for? What were the giant binoculars for? What were they even doing out there? We weren't even near the federal fucking courthouse. And so I pointed that out, and Jen said she hadn't seen them. And so I pointed to a group of them, and one of them immediately stands up and aggressively points back at me. What the fuck is that about? Like, dude had three Phoenix PD standing guard for him. And that punk-ass coward was just itching to start a fight with someone. It's like, where do they fucking get these people from? And this is the thing that scares me, right? Because a lot of these people in U.S. Marshals and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a lot of these people are recent hires, right? And I worry a little bit that these people are a little too fond of Cheeto Hitler and the reforms he's brought about.
Which I guess just puts us right into the one question that I have to ask, because it's looking real weird out there with all the defund the police. Because let me tell you, when I read defund the police, I'm not really stoked on that idea. I don't understand. I don't think that if we get rid of police and police violence that people are going to stop robbing banks. So I needed a little clarification on that, because if we're talking about defunding as in taking some of their money away to give to like schools and stuff like that, because I believe that if you fund schools better, that you will not need as many people in prisons. You know, you can cut the pipeline, the prison pipeline, like those kinds of things. But if that's what you're talking about, then defund police is not the right way to go about it, because that sounds real, real bad. I think that I might be on, you know, like I said, I'm pretty in the middle on the left side, but, you know, I'm not that far to the left. And hearing defund the police kind of makes my butthole pucker.
Do I have great news for you?
All right.
All right. So so defund the police doesn't actually mean doing away with police. So part of the reason why awkward language like defund is being used is because reform the police isn't strong enough. Right? You have a lot of very angry people out there who have heard about police reform for decades now, and the shit never changes. It seems to be worse now than it has ever been. The exception of maybe there were some periods in the late 60s, early 70s, where I believe it was probably worse than it is now, to be honest. But in terms of, you know, just the steady cadence of executions of unarmed American civilians at the hands of law enforcement is backbreaking. And so when you turn to that crowd of people who not only is angry over the latest extrajudicial killing at the hands of police, but now the police have responded to their anger with even more abuse and violence. And you turn to those people and go, look, guys, look, we're going to reform the police. They go, fuck you. You've been saying that for 50, 60, 100, 400 years. We're done with reforming the police. So defund the police means kind of a range of things. Is there a small group out there, most of them probably waving black flags, who would go, fuck yeah, let's yank that funding and shut those police departments down?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like, I'm pretty sure that's anarchy.
So there are some people out there. They represent a fraction of 1% of the American population, right? And the vast majority, even of anarchists, don't buy into that line of thinking, you know, because they understand sort of some of the sad realities of human nature, particularly. We've talked about this before, the whole Reinhold Niebuhr thing. He was a Catholic theologian in the 50s, and he wrote about how man was capable of redemption as an individual, but once you enmesh man in an institution, which ironically, because he's a Catholic theologian, right, wouldn't that same logic apply to the church? Once you enmesh man in an institution, he becomes incapable, he becomes irredeemable, right? Because institutional dynamics take over that very often place themselves between individuals and really the best expression of who they can be. There's some truth to what Niebuhr wrote. There's some obvious hypocrisy and bullshit in there too, but there's some truth to it. So, damn it, I veered off track. So I'm super excited about this. Because this is, to be honest, Mark, I know it sounds scary. I was talking about the anarchists. Most anarchists don't even buy into the idea that we just need to do away with police entirely. And then we went on to human nature. That's how I ended up spiraling into Reinhold Niebuhr once again. So this is a good thing. This is a really great thing from a few different perspectives, right? One, police budgets administratively are bloated around the country. They have been for decades now. And that money, it's a zero-sum game, right? There's a limited pot of money that comes into the state or local municipalities every year in the form of taxes and some grants from the federal government and some handouts from the Department of Defense. But for the most part, they collect taxes and they steal. So if you get pulled over and in some jurisdictions, they just accuse you of being involved in the distribution of illicit narcotics. Even if afterwards you are acquitted, very often they're still allowed to keep your car. And then they sell that car and they use the money to buy interesting toys for themselves, because it's been determined that the local jurisdictions can keep that money. And the original intention behind this, by the way, was sound, right? They were, even though I don't agree with the war on drugs, the logic behind it, drug cartels run on money. You know, when you start seizing all of their assets and their cash, that deprives them of that money. It makes their operations that much more difficult. I get why they originally did it. They wrote the laws wrong. They allowed local police forces to enforce them and to make use of them. And now we have a situation where very often the local PD, and this is most often sheriff's departments, by the way, is stealing from citizenry. Like sometimes it's not even, there isn't even a pretense of a crime that took place, but all of a sudden that person was a drug mule for that one night because they had an extra nice car, right? Or a house, or they had a pocket full of cash. So that's one of the ways that they fund themselves. The other way that the primary funding source is taxes. Taxes are a zero-sum game. There's a fixed amount of money that comes in over a 12-month period from the citizens of a municipality. And for every dollar that gets diverted to policing, that's a dollar that has to come out of some other vital service that the state provides, like education, like healthcare, like mental health care, right, which has been a crisis in this country since the mid-80s. Shout out to Doug Stanhope, who we were talking about over the weekend, who made some unfortunate comments about Gabby Giffords, but otherwise has a damn good point about why can't his wife...
Bingo.
Bingo, get the mental health care that she needs to, you know, I mean, the lady has had an obviously rough fucking time of it the last few years, man. She needs help. Why can't she get that help, right? And it, in large part, it's because Reagan and his conservative cronies tore apart the public mental health care system in the 80s. They privatized it, which is, by the way, why after we left the protest last night, and I wanted to make sure that I mentioned this tonight, we drove past the solution to COVID-19 in Phoenix for the homeless population. That is, they closed the shelters and they set up a shanty town in one of the worst industrial parts of Phoenix, west of the airport. And it covers block after block after block of tents with garbage piled around them and fucking open fires all over the place and people stumbling through the streets like it's fucking Skid Row. And most of those people are where they are because they have a mental health crisis and cannot get the assistance they need. That money that could be going to help those people with their mental health problems, which may divert them from becoming involved in the law enforcement, in the justice system in the first place, instead gets siphoned out to buy neat toys for the cops. Keep in mind, what I am not saying is that actual police officers are overpaid, because they are criminally underpaid for the work that they do. They still make more than teachers, which I think is a crime, but they are underpaid for the work that they do. This money is going to administrative costs and to buy them equipment they don't need, to buy AR-15s. Most cops don't fucking need an AR-15.
Yeah,
right?
Here in Prescott, all the motorcycle cops have scabbards with AR-15s on them.
Yes!
Why all the motorcycle cops in Prescott need fucking AR-15s on scabbards?
They did the same thing in Scottsdale. The exact same salesman probably went from Scottsdale to fucking to Phoenix up to PV, all over the place selling these goddamn scabbards for AR-15. So now your motorcycle cops, right? And keep in mind, motorcycle cops, their primary duty, right, was to serve as a form of community policing, right? So they're outside the cruiser, their face is visible, they can slow down easily and talk to the people in the community that they're supposed to be serving. Now these fuckers are riding or driving around looking like goddamn RoboCop. They've got almost a full face fucking covering, like they're flying a fighter jet, and they've got a goddamn machine gun strapped to the back of their motorcycle. They don't need that shit. They don't. And the money that paid for it came from money that could have paid for mental health care, or could have gone to better teacher pay, or could have gone to textbooks, or classroom repairs, or new facilities, or better food. Anything in our school system, anything in our healthcare system, anything more productive than buying another goddamn assault rifle for a cop who doesn't need it. Scottsdale, the city of Scottsdale, couple hundred thousand people, most of them milquetoast white, extremely low crime rate, has two fucking SWAT teams, two, and multiple tanks, one of which is an MRAP. How many fucking improvised explosive devices is the Scottsdale PD going to encounter in a given year? Goddamn, Sheriff Joe Arpaio almost got a 50 caliber machine gun for the sheriff's department. I say almost because ultimately, you know, people stepped in and went, no. No.
You're not allowed. You're not allowed to use this on human beings in war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an anti-material crew-served weapon, right? Does it get fired at human beings in war? Of course it does. But does a goddamn local sheriff's department, even one that supposedly serves the – or not supposedly – does serve the largest county in terms of land mass in the United States? Do they need a machine gun? No, they don't need a machine gun. Right? They don't need a 50 cal. So this money is going to buy that kind of equipment. It's going to buy all of that fancy riot gear you see them using. It's going to replenish all those stores of CS gas and pepper spray and rubber bullets and beanbag rounds for shotguns, one of which shattered the skull of a 20-year-old protester just last week. And he just happened to be standing next to someone who threw a plastic water bottle, and they shattered his fucking skull with a beanbag round right above the eye for standing next to someone who threw a 1-liter plastic water bottle.
I would also like to speak on that, well, the protesters got out of control and were throwing water bottles. I did a lot of security back in the day at concerts. You know how many times I've dodged and got hit by fucking water bottles? A lot. You know how I'm doing? Just fine. You know what I wasn't wearing? A fucking helmet with a full face shield. I wasn't wearing a bulletproof vest. I wasn't wearing any of that shit. I I think you'll be all right from getting hit by a fucking water bottle. I'm just saying, I've been there and I'm okay.
But, and so I should say, right, that not all of it, even not the majority of it, goes to material costs for equipping cops with equipment that they don't need. Like the vast majority of them, even here in Arizona, where a couple months of the year, right, they got to be in their cruiser when they're out there. But for the rest of the year, they should be walking. They should be walking around the neighborhoods that they patrol, meeting the people that they serve, becoming friends with those people. This whole principle is called community policing. It's part of what is driving this movement to defund police departments. And we'll get to that, right? And I can see you smirking. Community policing, by the way, was the predominant policing model until 1980. And it was incredibly effective. And where it has been re-implemented, it is still incredibly effective, because you know who the best source of intel about criminal activity in any neighborhood is? The fucking people who live there. You know the best way to get them to talk to you about criminal activity in their neighborhood is to go and meet them and let them know your name and recognize your face and understand that you are not there because you think you rule over them. You are there because you're a public servant who is there to keep them safe and serve their needs. And there's no better way to ensure that they know that than by being there with them, right? Some of the most heartwarming pictures and videos we've seen over the course of the last 10 days have been of police officers doing just that, taking the helmet off, putting the gun away, walking over to kneel with protesters, march with protesters, hug them. You know, there was a video that my wife showed me, that Jen showed me the other day, of an officer in, I think it was in D.C., who stopped to play basketball with a bunch of kids who were nearby to one of these protest events, right? Like, it's that kind of policing is incredibly invaluable in building trust between you, an organization that can end up under threat if the neighborhood you're supposed to be serving no longer trusts you, right? And the people who pay the money in taxes for the service you provide. This isn't an empty transaction. There's money changing hands here. The people who live in these neighborhoods, the same people who are being abused and murdered by the police, are the same people who are paying the taxes that ultimately fund those police in the first place. That's part of what makes this all so fucking gross and just like so.
But doesn't it seem a little disingenuous to, hey, we want to have community policing so you can come and play basketball with my son so that when you see him later, you don't shoot him in the fucking face?
Yeah, well, look, so the statement of it doesn't need to be that cynical, but that's the long and short of it. And it doesn't seem disingenuous at all. That's how you build relationships. That's how human beings work. It's how we've worked for thousands of years, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years now, right? Is that our institutions, the things that have made us the most successful species on Earth, except for insects, right? There's some insects that still have us beat, is our ability to form complex institutions that allow us to cooperate and achieve goals that no individual or small disparate group would be able to achieve, right? To have created the reality in which we all live. There is no way we could have done this. And keep in mind that the preponderance of life is still good. We still live in one of the best of all possible times to be alive, right? We could not have done this as just tiny little groups or individuals. It's just not possible. That's a fucking myth. And it's a pernicious myth. It's one of the ones that's fostered, for example, when you hear all of this bullshit about, you know, these Silicon Valley entrepreneurs who dropped out of college. Yeah, they dropped out of college after 2 years in an Ivy League school, networking and meeting a bunch of other rich people who can give them money. And their parents had money to begin with. So, yeah, they dropped out of college, but they were already several car lengths ahead of everyone else in the race. So they could take that whole myth and shove it up their ass sideways. They got where they were in large part because of the social institutions in which they're enmeshed. Those social institutions require renewal through meaningful and intimate interactions. And if you take that away, you sever the most meaningful connection between two groups, eventually they will go to war, right? Part of how we survived the Cold War, Mark, was we created a system whereby two human beings, not two institutions, not two groups, two human beings, the two people, the Soviet premier and the U.S. president, the two people with their fingers poised over the button, could call each other directly at any time that there was a potential nuclear threat to defuse that situation. And is it a tragedy that what finally drove us to have to create that system was that we had created mutually assured destruction and everyone just had to be convinced that if there was ever any kind of nuclear exchange, it would be the end of all of us? Yeah, that's kind of sad, but nevertheless, it demonstrates the principle, right? The thing that had gotten disconnected was that human, that intimate relationship, the ability to connect person to person. And that is part of what had driven us so far apart and down that road to madness. And it's the same, but on a smaller scale with these police departments, right? We've created these structures of enforcement that require institutions in which these human beings, these police officers, are enmeshed, and these institutions drive them to behave in certain ways. Right. And the institutions, by the way, are also configured in a way that they kind of attract a bad class of person to begin with. Right. Not all cops, as we discussed last time, but there are a significant number of cops who got into the game because they get off on hurting. Right. Or they just have that sort of aggressive personality that really wants to be confrontational. And there are a couple of different social currents at work in driving that as well. Part of which is 20 years of endless war in the Middle East and Central Asia, and a bunch of people who came back home with no meaningful training other than combat. And then we tell those people, all right, go find a job, find a way to support your family. And a lot of them went into policing. But unfortunately, when they went into policing, we dressed them in the exact same battle rattle they were wearing in Kandahar, but we dropped them into a neighborhood, again, full of people who don't look like them, and said, oh, by the way, though, we don't want you to have a combative attitude towards these people. You're never going to get out of your heavily reinforced SUV. You're going to carry around assault rifles with you wherever you go. You're going to wear tactical gear and body armor everywhere you go. But we don't want you to be combative with the people that you're, because you're there to protect and serve them, not abuse them. Of course that system's going to fucking break down. You've created a human you've created a separation between the human beings. You've also created a context in which one of those groups feels like they are still at war. And that attitude spreads even to the ones who weren't combat veterans. Right? You dress them up in tactical gear. You give them tanks. You give them assault weapons. Yes, they're going to feel like they're at war. And who are they at war with? They're at war with the communities that they're there, that they're being paid to protect and serve. So defund the police. It's an unfortunate and inelegant choice of words.
Thank good. Like, I'm just thinking about how often we've had to eat shit on global warming as opposed to climate change.
Well, and so here's the thing with global warming and climate change. Again, that was a learning process, just like this one is, right? What made us change from one name to the other wasn't necessarily PR, although, of course, that was important. The data changed. And we started to realize that it wasn't just going to be a warming trend. There was going to be all sorts of weather disruptions that moved in really unpredictable ways. Dude, it's fucking June 8th, and it's
so
in the 80s
outside.
It's
amazing.
Gorgeous, right? But that's terrifying. We live in the fucking Sonoran Desert. It should be 115 degrees out there right now. It's weird, man. I mean, yeah, did I go outside tonight and grill and enjoy it? Of course I did, because I'm not a moron, but it's still scary as fuck, right? Because you know it's part of a broader trend where a negative consequence is eventually going to come along, right? No one in nature gets a free lunch. So the same thing is happening with the idea about reform, defund, right? The defund thing is going to unfortunately have to change in a hothouse, right? Some people are going to have to come along to go, wait, you need to chill with the language because people aren't getting it. Your messaging is off. What you mean is reinvent the police. And so when you hear what the Minnesota City Council has proposed, that's what they mean. They don't mean eliminate the police department. They do mean eliminate the police department that exists there right now.
As it stands.
As it stands, exactly. Because in Minnesota, there's no better step in Minneapolis, there's no better step they could take. You look at the statistics from that city, and it is appalling the rate at which enforcement increases if you are black, right? So there is clear evidence of institutional racism that has been incredibly resistant to reform over the course of the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So what needs to happen? That entire institution needs to be ripped out by the roots. And instead, for the law enforcement function of policing, right, which is only one small part of what policing is supposed to be about, right? Because again, and it's functional, it's not altruistic. It's what I mentioned before, although there are some cops out there who, for them, it is altruistic. They genuinely enjoy making a connection with the community that they serve. They genuinely enjoy going out and meeting those people. Even if you don't enjoy that stuff, there is a functional benefit for you to having established a meaningful relationship with the people in the community that you patrol. And that is, they will come to you with valuable intel about bad actors in their community that allow you to head off conflict, right? And that's the next thing that they want to put in place. So you put in a much smaller, less heavily armed group of individuals to do the law enforcement and sort of community policing aspect of all of this. But then you divert a lot of that money into programs that will keep people out of the justice cycle in the first place. Right. So increased money for education, increased money for violence and drug interdiction. Right. And by that, I don't mean interdiction in the DEA sense. I mean moving in before a problem has really taken root. Like, for example, if a cop gets intel about a potential conflict between two groups of people who live in that neighborhood, you could have funding out there for dedicated crisis intervention units that go out and immediately start to mediate the conflict between those two groups to reduce the likelihood that they ever actually act out in a violent way. These programs have been piloted around the country and they work. They are really effective at reducing the levels of conflict in neighborhoods, but it requires cooperation from the police and it requires the police to be built around a community policing model, right? You can also divert some of that money into healthcare, into mental health care, which again is going to greatly reduce the number of negative interactions between citizens and the police who are there to serve them. So it's not defunding the police, right? It is diversifying the police function. It's saying policing isn't just putting your knee on people's necks, right? It isn't just about driving around in wearing body armor and looking intimidating. Maybe under certain circumstances that needs to be a part of it, right? I'm not such an idealist that I don't think that there are some people out there that need to, on occasion, look around and go, oh shit, there are some like gnarly looking cops right over there. I probably shouldn't do what I was thinking about doing. Does that occasionally happen? Yeah. But the vast majority of the time, do the police, you know, could the police and the community be much better served by having set up these more nuanced and robust relationships between the community and the various institutional arms of the police force so that they can head this shit off before they have to make an intimidating show of force? Yes, absolutely. All of us could be better served by that. Think about the counter proposal. The counter proposal is, right, absolutely we shouldn't take their money away. And in many instances, you have people arguing that they should have more money, more guns, more tanks, more body armor, more CS gas canisters, more rubber bullets, more beanbag rounds, more of everything. More tasers. Give me more. Really? Has any of that made you any safer? The truth is, by the way, that all of us are much safer than we are led to believe, right? But the forces that are leading us to believe that we're under threat are the very same forces that are profiting from the militarization of our police. So most of us have no cause to ever worry about how heavily armed the police are. And the rest of us, our concern is about what the police might do to us with those weapons, not whether or not they have enough weapons to stop a bad guy like in the, what was it, 1996 in the LA bank robbery, right? Which kicked off the whole every cop has to have an assault rifle. Right? For those of you who don't know, back in 1996, there was a really highly publicized event in LA where a couple of bad guys wearing head-to-toe body armor. So they had like greaves, they had pauldrons, they had the ceramic chest plate, all of helmets, face masks, everything. And they loaded up their vehicle with thousands of rounds. They were both carrying AK-47s as well as like backup sidearms. It's clear that both of them had had some sort of training in this area. And they went out and robbed a bank. And LAPD was notified and showed up. And LAPD came to the party with handguns and shotguns. And it took about 45 minutes before LAPD SWAT team was able to really insert itself into the situation and take these two dudes down. I would note that one of the two men was still killed with a goddamn handgun.
His own?
No, it's one of the final scenes in the video of this. One of the SWAT team members just walks up to within 10 feet of him and tags him right in the head. And the guy goes down.
I thought one of them killed themselves. Anyway, I don't know.
And I mean, I think that was the other one who stayed with the car.
Yeah.
Ended up confronting the squad car, and he was just sort of spraying semi-automatic rifle fire all over the place. And then eventually he, you know, swallowed a bullet.
But yeah, it looked like Heat, the movie Heat, only with two people. It was, and yeah, I think that the cops ended up having to go into gun stores to get guns to try to match up. But you still don't need ARs on every goddamn motorcycle.
No, nor do you.
Because that happened. How many times has that happened? That one time?
Yeah.
How did they end? Dead?
By the way, I could think of more effective ways to make sure that something like that doesn't happen. Rather than making every cop a goddamn soldier or marine running around in our civilian neighborhoods, maybe we do something about the access to body armor and weapons of war. Maybe we address that problem before we go and stick an AR-15 in the hands of every cop. You know what it takes to qualify at the shooting range to be a member of the New York Police Department?
I do not.
4 out of 10 rounds every 6 months. You have to put 4 out of 10 rounds on target to qualify for the NYPD. That person has access to an AR-15.
For record, back when you needed to have a CCW here in Arizona to have a concealed weapons permit, you had to hit 7 out of 10. That's honest.
Concealed carry owners don't have a policeman's benevolent association negotiating on their behalf.
Yeah, and we have two eyes at work, apparently.
Yeah. So, and you know, that policy may have since changed. I hope so. But the last time I looked, that was still the case. And I know that here locally, I've talked to my friends who are cops, and it's not much better here. In most places here, you have to put 5 out of 10 rounds on target, maybe 6. But that still means you're going to miss 4 out of every 10 fucking shots, and they want to put a semi-automatic assault rifle in your hands? Why? That makes me feel way more insecure than the idea that we have a few thousand poorly qualified individuals running around out there with AR-15s. That's terrifying to me, and especially because those people have, in many ways, a license to kill, as we've seen, right? As Daniel Shaver found out to his chagrin, as John Loxus found out to his chagrin. By the way, neither officer really faced any consequences in either of those cases, unless the officer in the Daniel Shaver case ultimately ended up facing some sort of consequence.
Oh, no, he was acquitted, and they put him back on the Mesa PD for 47 days, so now he can get his $30,000 pension. And I've also heard that he said that he suffered PTSD from that event, so he's getting an extra $2,000.
Yeah.
So, no, didn't really suffer any massive repercussions. The officer that shot John, he had 6 other kills before. And
had been, well, not kills, but he had had 6 other complaints. He had had 6 other instances where he had discharged his weapon.
I will put up the article at Plastic Cup Pod on Facebook. I will put up the article because I know
for a fact he was asked to leave the SWAT team for being too aggressive.
So do you need to pull this thing into the station?
Yeah.
So defund.
No. So it's redefine, right? Or reinvent. That's what we need to go with, because that's what people are proposing. Boots on the ground. That's what's happening in Minneapolis right now. They're not trying to get rid of police entirely. They are trying to reinvent the way they do policing, right? And it's the same, by the way, in New York. It's even in New York City, it's even more directly confrontational, right? The New York City Police Department is out of control. And someone needs to step in and smack them around a little bit. And the best way you do that is by cutting their budget, right? They have to understand that there are consequences for their actions. They can't stomp their feet and cry every time something happens that they don't like and pretend that somehow, you know, there's a choice in all of this. They volunteered to be cops. They knew what the rules were when they volunteered. If they're not willing to follow those fucking rules, they need to go find another goddamn job, right? As opposed to whining about it and, like, you know, you had circumstances. You remember back in 2014 with the whole Ferguson thing. Was it Ferguson? No, it was after Eric Garner, after they murdered Eric Garner. By the way, they murdered Eric Garner. They strangled him to death for selling cigarettes without a tax stamp. That's what Eric Garner died for. George Floyd was murdered for allegedly passing a bad $20 bill, a fake $20 bill to get a pack of cigarettes, right? He was murdered for allegedly. Breonna Taylor, right, whose name you and I about both now, anyone who's been to the protests now knows very well, a lot of what they do as you're marching through these protests, you spend a lot of time saying the names, Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. Breonna Taylor didn't even do any of the things that are normally used to justify having murdered someone. She just happened to be in a house where the police believed drugs from another drug dealer, right, someone totally unrelated to her, had delivered at one point in the past. And that was all they had to say to get a judge to sign off on what's called a no-knock warrant. A no-knock warrant means they come up and kick in your door and put a gun in your face without ever saying that they are the police. I cannot think of a better way to ensure that the person inside that house starts shooting at you than a no-knock warrant. I can assure you that if a bunch of heavily armed fucktards kicked through my front door without announcing they were the cops, the very first thing I would do is grab my shotgun and open up.
Which her partner did, and yep. Then the police shot over 20 rounds and killed her.
Uh-huh.
As she was in her own house.
So, in New York, they're making proposals in some ways similar to what they're doing in Minneapolis, but it's a little bit more confrontational and direct. This is a little bit more, you know, the civilian authority finally reasserting control over an out of control police department. But there was another good article, and I want to wrap up with this one because we took a quickie and turned it into 48 minutes. I took a quickie and turned it into 48 minutes. There was a really good article in Slate Magazine today online. I'm completely forgetting what the title was, but you guys will be able to find it based on what I'm about to tell you. The idea in this article was, hey, we're now seeing a bunch of sheriffs, like the sheriff in Louisiana, who's put out a statement about how horrible what happened to George Floyd was, and he took off his helmet and went and walked with the protesters and this and that and the other thing. And they're pointing out the fact that, hey, this is why reforming police departments isn't enough, right? That same guy, Gatreau, I think his name is, the sheriff in New Orleans, 40 people have died in his jails under mysterious circumstances in the last couple of years. 40 souls lost to his fucking jails, right? His police department, it's far improved over what the New Orleans Police Department used to be. They were well known previously for murdering a motherfucker, right? They've made some improvements, but they are nowhere near good enough. And this same guy has been instrumental in blocking efforts at reform in the past, right? The same with the police chief Acevedo in Houston, right? That same guy has gone to bat for bad cops and has gone to the mattresses against meaningful reform in the past, right? So reform is not good enough. The back of this system needs to be broken. And the only way you're going to do that is by taking the money and redistributing it to other more important functions. Reinvent the police. By the way, the reinvent or reimagine language came from a conversation I had with my buddy Jack, who was my dissertation co-chair when I was at ASU. And we were talking today about how unfortunate the defund the police language was. We had a nice text exchange about it. And that's where that conversation originally started for me.
Because I totally agree. Like, defund is just not good. Like, they did not run that through the right test groups.
Well, you know, the right-wingers have already weaponized it, right? They're using it against Joe Biden now. They backed him into a corner and made him come out saying he doesn't support defunding the police, right? Whereas if they had used language like reinvent or reimagine or something else like that, that's still as comprehensive and definitive, but just not as like absolutely negative as defund, he wouldn't have been caught in that bind.
Because I mean, like, reinventing, it sounds right, because yes, a lot of these things that police are called out on, a social worker could handle it way better than somebody with a gun. And, you know, like, how many calls do you think that the police get in Central Phoenix just based on people that need mental help?
And
people
we shouldn't expect police officers to be social workers.
They are not.
Or psychiatrists.
Therefore, maybe we should get some social workers, take some of the money, and so that, like, if you're talking about defunding, as we were discussing, to move some of that money around to do other things. All right, and I kind of, as we're discussing, like, police reform or not reform, because that's not the right word, reinvention, I did talk a little bit about the 8 ways to reinvent policing, and I just wanted to go over those real quick. 8cantwait.org is the place. I'm assuming that these will all sound pretty good to you, Dr. Sean Hayes. Ban chokeholds and strangleholds. Yep. Require de-escalation. Require warning before shooting. Require exhausting all alternatives before shooting. Duty to intervene, a.k.a. if you see a cop kneeling on somebody's neck, you have to tell, if you are another cop, you have to prevent that from happening. Ban shooting at moving vehicles. I didn't even know that was still allowed. Require use of force continuum and require comprehensive reporting. None of that shit seems like anything too off the ball. And I think that is, if people were looking for what are the steps, like what will you be happy with, like what will justice for George Floyd mean, I think those are pretty good, easy, concrete steps.
So, hey, there's one that you have to add to it, right? And I hope the eight easy steps people will eventually think of this and include it in there, because the other eight steps are largely meaningless without this first one. There's a principle out there called qualified immunity. Supreme Court came up with it. There's no law that actually establishes it. This was, and again, this is what liberal justices usually get accused of, but it was conservative justices litigating or legislating from the bench. And they decided that law enforcement officers have essentially the benefit of the doubt. They've made it incredibly difficult to effectively sue individual officers or police departments or municipal governments for the misdeeds of police officers carried out in the course of their duty, right? So, like, qualified immunity might make it actually kind of difficult for George Floyd's family to sue the city of Minneapolis. Fortunately, like, typically once you get to the level of murder, and actually, I shouldn't say that. Even without the level of murder, like, that's part of why the original prosecutor in George Floyd's case didn't want to press charges, was because it would be incredibly difficult to convict because of qualified immunity. It's only because of the protests, and in particular, the fact that the protesters took the damage to rich white neighborhoods this time, that Derek Chauvin is actually being charged and will probably be convicted. I have a pretty decent feeling about his conviction. So qualified immunity needs to end. That's going to actually have to happen at the federal level. Congress will have to pass legislation basically saying, no, the Supreme Court was wrong. Police officers, when they commit illegal violence against citizens, can be held criminally liable and civilly liable. It's going to be a tough bill to pass because there are a lot of municipalities that will oppose it because they are also on the chopping block when you make that change. But it is the only thing that makes those other eight steps effective, right? Because if you ban chokeholds, but it's impossible to prosecute or sue for an officer who breaks that code and chokes someone anyway, right? The only thing you can do is the internal police department disciplinary process, then that ban doesn't mean much, right? So you have to make it possible to actually punish that officer for having assaulted or murdered a citizen, not just make it possible for them to be fired. They have to face real consequences because, as we know, if they're fired from one police department, they don't even have to move. They'll just go to the sheriff's department and the sheriff's department will hire them. Or they go to a police department 3 miles away in a different municipality and they get a job there, right? And it's super easy for them to do so, even if they committed horrible crimes in the jurisdiction they were just coming from, right? So you have to make it possible to leverage real punishments against officers who break the law in this way. So qualified immunity needs to be, it's actually nine essential things, not eight.
Let's not talk about the Catholic Church. Hey, that does it in for another episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. By the way, it's 2 minutes till 8 o'clock, so you can go out and walk your dog because the curfew has been lifted. I thought it was funny that with the end of two podcasts ago, we ended as the curfew was going into effect. But everybody's been peaceful. Everybody, please try to stay peaceful. Be good out there. We don't want to have another curfew. And I think that just love and good, happy things. You can interact with the show at Plastic Cup Pod on your favorite social media sites. You enjoyed this, so go ahead and hit subscribe on however you are listening to this. And we will probably talk at you again real soon. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's just another